the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with a shout-out to viewers in city number 49 on our audience list, which is Indianapolis, Indiana. And then, I kick off the latest readout video from my free Wednesday wake-up email newsletter with a modern rendition of Your Feet's Too Big. The lyrics to this version say people who insist that green energy, other than nuclear, is an environmental and economic marvel are colossally wrong. They're wrong because wind and solar cannot get the job done, which is why the world is becoming more rather than less dependent on fossil fuels, regardless of how intensively politicians degas about a transition. And they're wrong because, as people are finally realizing, green energy isn't even green. It's very dirty and it's very energy intensive to make solar panels and windmills. When they wear out, which they do surprisingly fast, they're very hard to get rid of, including by comparison with spent nuclear fuel, and while operating, they have a massive footprint on the landscape, one that is in fact too big. How much too big? Well, they vindicated Blake's warning about dark satanic mills destroying England, even turning Charlotte Bronte's Wuthering Heights into windmill heights as three-bladed monsters swarm across the landscape like H.G. Wells' Martians. And now, somebody going by the name Reliable AB Energy has, quote, started a map of all the wind and solar projects in Alberta, end quote, including visual impact zones across that formerly green and pleasant land. Ugh. And you must understand that Alberta is big. At 661,848 square kilometers, that's 255,541 square miles, it's the fourth largest province in the world's second largest country. If Alberta were independent, it would be the world's 39th largest country, more than twice the size of the UK. So it's not, you might think, a place that even politicians could litter in the name of cleaning it up. But you'd be wrong. They've made quite a mess of the southern part, especially the southeast. And since those same politicians are convinced that we must double, triple, quadruple, or whatever pull our generating capacity in less than 25 years without using the stuff proven to work that abounds under Alberta's soil, we're going to trash the landscape in every way from toxic minerals to hideous views. So, that's Alberta. Imagine what's going to happen where you live if it's more crowded. Not a pretty picture, we'll wager. In the newsletter, we also repeat a question that goes to the heart of modern global warming orthodoxy, which is this. Since nature is the biggest emitter of carbon dioxide by far, but also insatiably hungry for the stuff, how is it that it supposedly gobbles up all the natural output, but only a suspiciously round 50% of our carbon pollution? Does ours taste bad compared to the same stuff released by rotting plants or swirling oceans? How does nature even tell them apart? Well, because human CO2 comes overwhelmingly from fossil fuels, it does have a slightly different isotopic signature, but it's not enough to affect photosynthesis or any of the other important carbon cycle mechanisms. Nevertheless, scientists have long claimed that amid rising atmospheric CO2, there should be a detectable increase in the sort with our fingerprints on it, that is, with the isotopic signature of fossil fuels. And a new study says there isn't. The reason there's this measurable isotopic difference is that atmospheric CO2 is exposed to cosmic rays, and they create carbon isotopes that are equally at home in CO2, but have differing half-lives. Meanwhile, since fossil fuels are sheltered from most such radiation underground for millions of years, the shorter-lived isotopes in their carbon decays and becomes less common as a share of it. Specifically, in this case, we're talking about C13. Even carbon that's naturally sequestered near the surface of the planet, or the oceans, will lose some share of its C13. So, if nature is releasing more CO2 than it used to, that will also cause the ratio of C13 to C12 in the air to fall, though by a different proportion. Now, the actual paper is, of course, a complex exercise in mathematics and data analysis, but its bottom line is, and I quote, 1. For modern instrumental carbon isotopic data of the last 40 years, no signs of human fossil fuel CO2 emissions can be discerned. 2. Proxy data since the Little Ice Age suggests that the modern period of instrumental data does not differ, in terms of the net isotopic signature of atmospheric CO2 sources and sinks, from earlier centuries, end quote. So, The observed relative decrease in C13 is explained by a natural warming that's been going on for centuries since the depths of the Little Ice Age, which we did not cause and almost certainly cannot influence whether its effects are benign, indifferent, or harmful. Now, one study does not make a scientific field, whether we like its conclusions or dislike them. But the possible implications of this one are revolutionary, or counter-revolutionary, restoring the older notion of a series of natural temperature cycles probably heading downward, somewhat ominously, toward the end of the Holocene interglacial and the return of the ice, and it is unaffected by human emissions of CO2 or the natural kind. Hi, everybody, and especially our new subscribers. We've been asking you to help us get to 100,000. We were at 84,000, and we're now over 91 because more than 7,000 people clicked the button in April alone. And I know we have a lot of new viewers, too. So if you're watching, but you're not yet a subscriber, please do click here. It's free, it helps us grow the channel, it protects us against getting deplatformed, and it makes sure that you hear about the latest videos. So to the new subscribers, welcome aboard, and for everybody, back to the show. In the newsletter, we also praised Martin Durkin's highly anticipated documentary, Climate the Movie, The Cold Truth, and we encourage you to check it out on the platforms like Rumble that aren't trying to ignore it. And we note a Daily Skeptic report that, quote, green billionaires are pouring money into discreet campaigns to persuade Hollywood writers to catastrophize the climate in future film and television scripts, end quote. Why would they do such a thing? Well, supposedly, if you have characters show, quote, anger, depression, grief, or other emotion, end quote, over the climate crisis, you will make them more relatable. Yeah, to people who are already neurotic climate alarmists. Just what Hollywood needs after chasing away half the audience with wokery. Scold the remaining half about the supposed climate crisis. Ah, and while Canada's Trudeau administration reinvents the economy and our society, we read the strange news that, quote, the Trans Mountain Pipeline Expansion Project, which the Trudeau government purchased from Kinder Morgan in 2018, will cost $3.1 billion more than the $30.9 billion projected last May, bringing the total cost to about $34 billion, more than six times the original estimate, end quote. So, they can do easy stuff like changing the weather, but not hard things like twin an already existing pipeline at anything resembling a reasonable cost. Plus, Blacklock's reporter tells us, quote, small business has received 14 cents on the dollar in carbon tax rebates promised 4 years ago, says Environment Minister Stephen Guilbeault, end quote. So, they can fix the weather, but they can't even give out free money, which you would have thought was one of politicians' easiest and most practiced tricks. Also, from the Go Woke, Go Broke file, Bloomberg informs us that, quote, Aaron Kinsey, the Republican chairman of the Texas State Board of Education, said that the $53 billion Texas Permanent School Fund had delivered an official notice to BlackRock terminating its financial management of approximately $8.5 billion in Texas assets, end quote. Which has to hurt. But rather than gloat, we note that Kinsey attributed the decision to, quote, a 2021 law that restricts investments with companies that engage in so-called boycotts of the fossil fuels industry, end quote. And really, here at CDN, we don't want politics intruding in investment decisions in any direction. Now look, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's a perpetual motion machine. Scientific American gushes that, quote, your next flight's fuel could be made by microbes. The aviation industry is getting ready to embrace fuel produced by fermentation, end quote. And it won't release carbon? See, the idea is that, quote, organisms that ferment gas can use industrial carbon dioxide emissions as a feedstock, end quote. Yeah, sure they can. But here's the problem. Burning fossil fuels to get CO2 works because it releases energy on balance. So, thanks to the wretched second law of thermodynamics, turning CO2 back into fuel by any method must use up energy. There is no free lunch in economics, in nature, or in midair. Meanwhile, the great and powerful man declares on X that, quote, the GOP has to be destroyed for America to survive. A party that coddles racism, misogyny, bigotry, nativism, fascism, hatred, hypocrisy, and dishonesty has no place in this or any country, end quote. So, some deep thoughts there from the science. In the newsletter, we also note the New York Times climate forward trumpeting that, quote, Biden administration issues rules aimed at phasing out gas cars. The regulations, designed to ensure that most new cars and light trucks are electric or hybrids by 2032, would transform the American auto market, end quote. Yeah, transform it as in destroy it. But the enthusiasts are determined to learn the hard way that just because politicians say that some law will do something and believe their own rhetoric is no reason to think that it will actually do that thing. Ah, and a reader alerts us to an article asking, quote, could homes made of fungi slash emissions from construction, end quote. Yeah, maybe. Cement is CO2 intensive. But arguably, the people saying we should live in mushrooms should stop taking them, lest they become convinced that the environment is so fragile that its survival or annihilation depends on fungus bricks. In the newsletter, we also delve into one of the really weird things about the whole debate around global warming, or the monologue around global warming, as alarmists would have it, namely that we keep being told that some big, bad, abstract thing called climate change is causing stuff like more tornadoes, more dry spells, more heat waves, more snowstorms, or whatever. Hence, constant claims like, quote, climate change is expected to crank up temperatures in winter more than any other season in Canada, end quote. But climate change isn't a cause of changes in the weather or a result of them. It is them. Okay? If winter temperatures rise, it's not because of climate change. It's an example of climate change. Ditto more floods or tornadoes, or indeed, fewer of them. Frankly, the idea that weather getting worse can cause weather to get worse is silly. It's a confusion of categories, but it's a very widespread one. In the newsletter, we also continue our Getting Worse series, this week by looking at droughts. With climate change getting worse each year, scientists are now warning that more and more regions around the world are vulnerable to severe droughts, potentially putting our food supply and even our survival at risk. Scary, huh? Actually, we just made it all up. But it probably sounded convincing, or at least tediously familiar. These days, you can get away with any claim about climate change as long as you say it's getting worse, and you don't show people the data, but you do insist that scientists have it. As it happens, some scientists do have the data. And in this case, the scientists who put that data together, covering 1981 to 2018, say, quote, for the entire globe, hemispheres, and the main grain-producing countries, China, USA, and India, drought has not intensified and expanded. Since drought has not intensified and expanded during strong global warming, food security in the next few years is likely to remain at the level of the most recent decade, end quote. Bummer, huh? If you're an alarmist, that is. In the newsletter, we also note that the fabled green energy transition really is like the Yeti. Various climate alarmists rush about insisting that they've not only glimpsed it somewhere, they've actually got a blurry image that might possibly not be an activist in a gorilla suit. But anyone who makes a systematic effort to find hard evidence comes back saying, no, it's not out there, including energy expert Vaclav Smil in a paper that somehow made its way into a presentation at JP Morgan, a woke big bank that thinks if it can just capture a troop of Yetis, it'll make a fortune. As for Smil, he notes that we're now halfway between the date of the Kyoto Protocol, 1997, and the net zero deadline, 2050. And then, he points out, quote, contrary to common impressions, there has been no absolute worldwide decarbonization. In fact, the very opposite is the case. The world has become much more reliant on fossil carbon, even as its relative share has declined a bit, end quote. How can this be? Well, because the slight decline in the fraction of energy use that comes from fossil fuels, quote, has been accompanied by a massive absolute increase in fossil fuel combustion. In 2022, the world consumed nearly 55% more energy locked in fossil carbon than it did in 1997, end quote. Oops. As for the next 27 years, Smil goes through the numbers on the key industrial processes that keep us powered and fed and says, dream on. The energy transition is physically impossible. So here's the deal. You could mortgage your house and blow all the cash looking for Yeti fur, Yeti skin, Yeti bones, or a live Yeti specimen, and you know what? You'd end up broke and empty-handed with no house. And the same thing is true of the green energy transition. Finally, from the CO2science.org archive, a study of otoliths, which are aragonite structures in fish that are used for acoustic perception and balance, and the oxygen isotopes they contain, because they're CaCO3, are a clue to when they were formed. The result of the study? It seems that sea surface temperatures some 6,000 years ago were 3 to 4 degrees Celsius warmer than in the 1990s, and showed better defined seasonal signals and little evidence of any El Niño activity. So, it was a lot warmer in the past, and if it warms up again, El Niños won't get worse, exactly as climate alarmists didn't say. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I don't believe in Yetis.